Yes, it's back. After a couple of months away, action in the Champions League resumed and the theme tune rang out around four grounds on Tuesday and Wednesday night. Next week, another four venues will be graced with the strains. The initial first-leg ties in the last 16 produced two spectacular results. Paris Saint-Germain thrashed Barcelona 4-0, and then on Wednesday evening, Bayern Munich destroyed Arsenal 5-1. For the managers on the receiving end of such spankings, Luis Enrique and Arsene Wenger, the talk's all about who'll replace them. The PSG boss Unai Emery has decided to opt for caution despite his team's four-goal cushion.
The only feeling I have is that the team had a huge effort, and it paid off if we consider the great work of Barcelona. And also, thanks to the great talent of our players and their ability to respond, we proved something today. But I keep on paying the same respect to Barcelona, and the message in the dressing room and to the squad is clear. We still have 90 minutes to go. We know we will suffer in Barcelona. We know it will be a long 90 minutes.
Well, a long 90 minutes is certainly in store for Arsenal when they host Bayern Munich on March the 7th at the Emirates. The Arsenal boss Arsene Wenger said his side collapsed mentally after defender Laurent Koscielny went off injured early in the second half. They conceded three goals in 10 minutes to trail 4-1, and Thomas Müller added the fifth in the dying seconds. 67-year-old Wenger's been in charge in North London for 20 years. Recently, the campaigns gathered pace for him to leave. His evaluation of events at the Allianz Arena would certainly have been painful to hear for his legions of admirers.
The real problems we faced was after the third goal, I felt, because we lost our organisation and we looked mentally very jaded and very vulnerable from that moment onwards. And after the last 25 minutes was a nightmare for us because we looked like we had no response.
It's that lack of reaction that will give the most ammunition to Wenger's critics. Still, we'll all be eating our words if Bayern are pulverised 6-1 in a couple of weeks. Interestingly, of the six goals scored on Wednesday night in Munich, only one came from a header. That was Robert Lewandowski's second for Bayern. On Wednesday, eight researchers in Britain published the results of an inquiry into what could be in store for footballers once their playing days are over. The team from Cardiff University and the Institute of Neurology in London looked at the data on 14 retired footballers who had dementia. The survey started in 1980 and finished in 2014. 13 of the men had been professionals and one had been a keen amateur player. They turned out for an average of 26 years. Half of them played at centre-forward or at centre-half, positions where a lot of headers are needed. There are also positions where there's often a clash of heads. Six men featured in the survey had post-mortems carried out on their brains. Dr. Helen Ling is a senior research associate at the Institute of Neurology and one of the authors of the report.
Under the microscope, we found pathological changes known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, also referred as CTE. This is a degenerative brain pathology, and we found this in four of the six brains we examined. In addition to that, of all the six brains we examined, we also found a feature which is referred as tearing of the septum pellucidum. Now, septum pellucidum is a thin membrane in the center of all our brains, and it is very susceptible to repetitive traumatic brain injury. And this is a feature very commonly seen in professional boxers. And we have found that in all of the six retired footballers.
Were they playing in an age when the balls were much heavier? Did some of them start in that era and finish much later when the balls were lighter? Can this kind of damage be linked with those heavier footballs? Or is this a problem which can occur with the lighter footballs?
Before 1980s, the ball used in games and training, they were leather football. The weight of the leather football, as we know, is heavier, and especially in wet condition, the football may increase in weight by 25%. And all of the 14 players included in this study played with the heavier football. However, our study is not designed to answer the question whether a pathological condition is limited to the heavier leather football, and that we cannot tell whether the new lighter synthetic football may or may not put the current players at risk. But there are a few arguments that we need to consider, including that if the ball has become lighter in the modern era after the 1980s, the lighter ball also can travel faster as well. So it might end up exposing players to the same amount of force on head impact. And the second thing to consider is that we know that the main risk of developing this CTE pathology is from repetitive exposure to head impacts over a prolonged period of time. But we don't know the amount of force required to trigger these pathological changes. So whether a heavier ball will increase the risk of developing this when compared with synthetic ball, we have no way of knowing, and more studies are needed.
Once these footballers have finished playing, what are the telltale signs that they have been affected by this? Is it just the normal signs of dementia, or are there other things which lead up to it?
These players, they develop dementia on average in the mid-60s. And Alzheimer's disease, we know that actually take place a little bit later, maybe in the late 60s or early 70s. So one possibility is that the earlier onset of dementia might point towards the underlying pathological changes of this condition. And also, in a proportion of people with this pathological condition may also have movement abnormality. So they might be more prone to falling over, imbalance. Some of them have signs of Parkinson's disease. And then also, many of them have mood and behavioral changes. So their personality change, they become more aggressive, and some of them become more apathetic and withdrawn.
This is very early research, and there's nothing definite about the link. What does your team, or what do other teams need to do so that there's perhaps in a year or two some really conclusive evidence which says if players face this, this is what will happen? What do you need to do to get those facts which everyone can understand?
CTE is a condition that can now only be definitively made in post-mortem. So at the moment, we still don't know what exactly the symptoms are during life and whether there are any diagnostic tests that can help us confirm the diagnosis when the person is still alive. So this is a challenge. And I think looking ahead, after our study, which shows a potential link between playing football and the development of CTE, the most pressing need for a study to confirm the causal link will be to include a large number of players, to measure the repetitive head impacts, and do various tests, which hopefully might become a diagnostic test in the future, such as testing the memory, looking at the scans of the head, and doing some special markers, such as blood tests, tests of the urine, tests of the saliva, looking for certain markers that will help us to secure this diagnosis during life. And eventually, most importantly, is to reach postmortem, so we can examine the brain to see who has this test end up having CTE, and who has this memory impairment end up having CTE, and who has this level of head impact exposure eventually develop CTE. Then we'll know what are the risks involved.
Neurologist and neuroscientist Dr. Helen Ling talking to me about her team's research into what could be in store for footballers once they finished their professional careers. That's it from Sports Insight for this week. From me, Paul Myers. Ciao.